I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Welcome, my babies. Welcome to Bliss to the Podcast. I am Patch Drury, your host. Thank you for listening. If you've listened to other episodes, thank you for coming back. If you haven't listened to other episodes, please go back and listen to them. There is not a lemon in the bunch, but we're really happy to have you. I'm especially happy to have you here today because, like I said, there are no lemons. All the episodes have been great, but today's episode is really something special. I interview Elena Lipson, and her life's purpose, her bliss, is to help women show up in their own lives as their best possible selves. And she does that by teaching them how to take care of themselves and how to express themselves and how to be, like I said, the best version of themselves. And it's really exciting, great work that she does, and it truly is her bliss, and we get into talking about that. But I'm really excited about this episode because you can hear it in the episode. There is a moment where I, while talking to Elena, have a vision, and it is a vision of the future, a vision of this podcast and what it could be and what it's here for and why I'm here. And why did that happen while I was talking to Elena? Because of what I've been saying over and over again. The influence of a vital person vitalizes. That's a Joseph Campbell quote. And he said it to say that when you surround yourself with people who are following their bliss, it is going to have a necessary effect on you. And so when Elena and I were talking, my bliss kind of just popped to the surface and said, this is it, man. This is the future. Here's where we're going. The doors are opening. And so it was a really neat moment. And it was also a moment where I kind of got a vision for what this podcast can do and what it can be and how I want to treat it going forward. I have spoken at length about Joseph Campbell on this podcast and at length on my social media and over drinks, if we've ever had drinks together or if we've ever sat and watched TV, I won't shut up about it. it's my thing. It's what I'm into. It's what I like reading about and talking about and studying. And so I wanted to find a way to use it. And this podcast has become that. And in talking with Elena, I kind of used Joseph Campbell's monomyth, his hero's journey, and we kind of laid it next to her path to her bliss to show where they line up. Because let me tell you, the hero's journey, the monomyth, all it is a map to finding your bliss. Because Joseph Campbell, he was this comparative religion professor, as you've probably heard me say, and he studied all the religions of the world, and he realized that in all their stories, in all the mythology, they were basically telling the same story over and over again. And what that story is it isn't really a story about gods or devils or heaven or hell. It's a story about us. It's a story about being human and how we have this responsibility to dive inside of ourselves and find the thing that gives us life and bring it back to the rest of the world. That is each of our responsibilities as a human, is to bring out the best, the thing that's living inside of you, and try to use it to bring the world back to life. And that is a goal that I can get really excited about. It's a goal that I am excited about. It's a goal that Elena is excited about, and she is living into every day. And I can't wait for you to hear that conversation with her. So going forward in episodes, we're going to lean more heavily on the story circle. And it won't be boring. It won't be me doing the same thing every week. But it is going to become kind of the touchstone of this podcast, even more than it has been. I know you're going to be like, really? You're going to talk about Joseph Campbell more? But we are, because I think, like I said, it's a roadmap. And who doesn't need a roadmap these days to make their way through life to the best version of themselves? So anyway, that's enough from me. Let's jump right into the podcast with Elena. If you like this, if it means something to you, what you hear, you can find her on her website, on her Facebook. She has a podcast of her own where she talks about this stuff, where she talks about women kind of staking their claim in the world and being the best version of themselves. I know I've used that phrase a lot, but I think it's a really helpful phrase here. Because how often do we feel like the best version of ourselves? How often do we feel like there's not room for improvement? And so Elena helps you navigate those waters. But anyway, thank you very much for listening. More episodes to come. Hope you like this one. Here it goes. Well, the point of this is to talk about bliss from a
perspective of Joseph Campbell's work and his hero's journey. And I think it's important to do that because that's really what the hero's journey was. Finding your bliss is a process of going down into yourself and kind of going deep and at times kind of having to confront parts of yourself that are there that maybe you don't like and kind of overcome some things you think about yourself. Find your bliss and then take it back to the world. And so, Elena, the most important question that we can ask on this podcast is, are you following your bliss right now, Elena?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So for anybody listening who may not be super familiar with you, what is it you do? What describe your bliss for everybody?
I literally, the way I think about my work is I get to do it, and I'm so grateful for the freedom that I have and the work that I do and the people that I work with. So I come from a corporate background where I was a corporate trainer and a coach within a big insurance company and a big education company. And when I had my son, he's 12 now. So when I had my son, my husband and I ended up moving to a new state and we sort of upended our lives. And you know what, like when a train is moving really fast and then when the train stops, you have a chance, like everything just kind of moves and goes wherever it goes and gets all...
Right.
You know, that's kind of how my life felt in the moment because I was a new mom. I moved to a new state with no support and started a new business. So I ended up, I'm telling you this because it really affects how I decided to do what I'm doing. So after, you know, about over a decade of working in corporate and hustling and building a coaching business on the side, I got my certification probably 17 years ago now. And I was a life and leadership coach back in California. And when my son was born, I just had this sense that I didn't want to work for anyone else. I wanted to, I'm a little bit of a rebel in that I don't really like to be critiqued very much, though I have accepted that much more. I don't like to have to ask for time off. I knew that I didn't want to be the mom who had to ask for time off if my son was sick or if he had a school play. So I kind of knew in advance that I was going to have to work for myself. And that's exactly what I did. And I figured it out and I started an online business where I was actually, I had an online store and I was blogging and I ended up really loving the blogging, really loving the writing, wanting to go back to my coaching roots. And so I went on a kind of a several year healing journey where my body was so overrun and overworked and overwhelmed from my corporate pace where I was working all the time and starting a business and really living that kind of one week off a year mentality. And the weekends were just to collapse and, you know, maybe see friends and family. And so doing that for a long time, I realized that's not what I wanted to do moving forward. That's not the kind of mom I wanted to be, not the kind of wife I wanted to be. And I didn't want my life based on a 9-to-5 calendar. And so as I went on my own personal physical healing journey from after having a baby, after having this overwhelm and exhaustion in my body, I ended up turning to yoga and kind of self-care before I knew what it was. And I really found a lot of, I guess, bliss. Let's talk about bliss. I found bliss in the process, meaning I started making connections between how I moved my body, how I spent time journaling, how I spent time in nature. And it really started healing what I was experiencing, which ended up being an autoimmune disease, which I didn't know I had at the time, but I was experiencing it. My body was just exhausted all the time. I felt like I had the flu all the time. My glands were constantly swollen. And so like, I just didn't feel good. And so through my own healing, I discovered like, wow, when I take time for myself, when I take care of myself, when I really follow what my body needs, I'm a much better mother. I'm more present for my husband. I'm a much better friend and sister and daughter. And wow, I feel excited and passionate about what I want to do. So I had my own little hero's journey through the time of having my son and really going into what I would call at the edge of depression and feeling like I was super alone. My body was falling apart and I was just in my early 30s. This is not right. So when it came time to, I had this like vision in my mind that when my son went to first grade, I would really go full time into whatever I wanted to do, but also with this understanding that I didn't want to do it the way I was doing it before. So as I decided to go into coaching again and hosting online programs and because now online is was this whole new world that I wanted to enter, because when I was coaching before, it was in person and on the phone, and Facebook didn't exist, and Instagram didn't exist back then. And now that it did, I thought, well, I could leverage my time. I could coach people from around the world. They don't have to be like in my backyard, and I could do it in my office at home, and then I can go back to my family. And so I started figuring that out. And so when I went back into coaching, I decided to be a self-care coach. And so I work with women, mostly entrepreneurs, mostly moms, but I have worked with men as well, where, and everything I teach applies to men, and everything I teach actually affects men quite specifically, because when I work with the women that I work with, the men in their lives benefit from
yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I really feel like I'm working with men and women. So basically, I teach daily practice. I teach self-care rituals. I teach mindset work all around self. It's self-care. It are the words, but really it's about self-mastery, self-love, and really building that mindset that you can do it your way. You can be a mom your way. You can run a business your way. You can value your wellness first and foremost. And I basically took everything that I did right and wrong over the last, 15 to 20 years, and I reverse engineered it to, well, how did this work? How did I get there? What were the things that I did every single day that really helped me to find that place of how you would, what you would call bliss?
Right.
For, for me, it's like that place of feeling really aligned with my core values, with what I find to be important, with how I want to show up every day. So I teach daily practice. I have a year-long membership program. It's actually more than a year because we're going into our fourth year now, and women have been there from the beginning, so they just keep coming back because it's not a one and done. It's a constant practice. That's why I teach it as a practice. So between my membership program and my rituals course, I have a 66 sacred rituals courses, which is really popular. It's all about like tiny little things to do every day, little meditations that help you to find the rituals that really ignite you and activate you and allow you to feel connected to yourself, to something bigger than yourself. Because honestly, it's so easy to say, does my work really matter? Do I matter? Am I alone? We're just in this really modern society where we are really disconnected in some ways, and even though technology helps us connect, it also can disconnect us. So I'm really passionate about helping you to find those small daily practices that help you to reignite your mission every day, to really feel like it does matter, I'm not alone, I am supported. Even if I touch one person a day and I activate them to feel better about their life and themselves, that I'm doing that work. And I think you're either called to do that work or you're not. I'm definitely called to be someone who does the spiritual work and then shares it and trusts that those who need to hear it are going to hear it.
Well, that's awesome. That you said a ton of stuff there that really resonated with me. The very first thing, like you, I've always kind of had a problem with authority. I started in church work, and that kind of blew up spectacularly. And I realized months after that happened that even though I wasn't a good fit in church work, I kept finding myself going back to it. And I took this personality test that said my personality type drew energy from having something to push against. And so people who had this personality type would often be drawn to ministry or the military or police work. The military and the police work do not sound attractive to me at all. But in ministry, I had a set of rules that I could kind of say, well, I don't like this one. I'm going to push hard against it. And so that was like a really big realization for me, because I still, to this day, I have a hot temper. I like to fight. I will get on Twitter and I will pick fights with people. And I know people hate that guy. And I realize that I hate that about myself. But I've also tried to give myself a little bit of a break about it, because I realize I have a personality type that needs something kind of poking me in the butt all the time, so to speak. The other thing you said was just, learning to care for yourself and take care of yourself, because I grew up in a home full of love. I look at my parents now, and they gave me nothing but love, and grew up in a really supportive community. But beside that, other than that, I think like everybody on the planet, I still, in spite of all that positive affirmation, have come to a place where I don't always like myself very much. And it's really hard. It's really easy to be hard on myself. It's really easy to kind of like, this morning calling you at the wrong time, I went into this whole like, oh, this is just like you. You're so stupid. You don't even understand time zones, and just really kind of laid myself out this morning. And I don't know where that comes from. And so having practice to stop and kind of love yourself in spite of that. It seems like it would be a really valuable thing. So kudos to you for giving that to people. So a lot of people, they start the journey towards their bliss because there was a call to adventure, is what it would be called in Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. Basically what that means is that there was something that wasn't right in their world, either in their personal world or the larger world, and they felt compelled to fix it. It sounds like for you, that was health concerns and what you saw kind of happening to your life. Is that right?
It is, and I'll go one layer deeper because the health concerns, you know, if you're really listening and if you're someone who's awake and aware, and it sounds like if you're following Joseph Campbell, then you definitely are going to tune into what I'm saying, is my health concern was definitely there. And I think a lot of people stop there, like, oh, I fixed my health. That's great. I took care of myself. I took a bath. I took a walk. But I want to go underneath. Like, I want to know why things are happening, and sometimes to my own detriment. Like, sometimes I just can't let it be. I'm like, why do people do this? But for me, I'm like, why did this happen? What was it? And the easy answer was overwork and taking on too much. But there was a deeper why that for me was sort of my inner call to really understand what was happening here so that I can change it. And for me, it was this real, and again, I don't know where it came from. Like, I don't know where it comes from. This is just where it is. But there was some part of me that was so trained to police people, but not in the typical way. Like, I could not say no to anyone. I wanted to be the person that people call. I want to be the person that you call for advice, for help, for support. I want to be the one that, you know, you need a babysitter in the middle of the night, I'm coming. Like, I'll wake up, you know. And this is before I had my own son and before I was married. And I was really that person in so many people's lives. Like,
yeah.
I became that person that they could not do without because they would call me for everything, or they would, you know, and I loved, there was a part of me that really thrived on it. Like, I needed to be needed in that way. Because I wasn't, well, now I don't really know why, because yet I didn't quite figure that out till a lot later, but there was something about me that really needed to be needed in that way. And what that was for me was, it ended up being someone who was always, you know, anyone could count on me. I even had my sister and my brother-in-law do a toast during their wedding day one time or anniversary, and they're like, thank you, Elena, for always saying yes. And I'm like, oh my God, I do always say yes, no matter what. And things that I love, you know, it's not like I was doing things that I hated. So there's kind of this little rub there where you take on so many yeses that you are overcommitting your energy, you're overcommitting yourself. And even though I was doing things that I loved, it meant saying no to things that were good for me, right? Maybe I needed a day off. Maybe yeah. I needed to do nothing. Maybe there were things in my life that I wasn't attending to that started to become stressors for me. So for me, it was about a lesson. Even now, like, I have to be very mindful of what I say yes to. I have to be mindful of saying yes because I really, really on a soul level want to, and I'm not pleasing someone. And to be quite honest, I love to say no now. When I make requests to people and they say no to me, there's a part of me that's cheering them on.
Awesome.
Like, yes. Like, this is someone who I know is not sacrificing themselves to do something for me. They're really being honest, and I know this is a true connection where they could feel comfortable to say, you know what, Elena, that doesn't work today. Can we try another day? Or just no. Like, no is fine. And I feel like I can say the same to them. So that, for me, was like the journey of becoming so authentic that I say yes because I really want to. I say no because I don't want to. And that has affected my relationship with my husband so dramatically, because I feel like in the past, if I said no to someone or spoke my truth to someone, that our relationship would be affected, right? And that's not a true relationship. So
right.
Like with my husband, there was, for years, I felt like there was parts of me that I couldn't say, that like I could be honest and be true, but there was that level of honesty that sometimes I couldn't quite get to. And my body would literally shake if I said something that I felt was edgy or unkind or like just, I don't know, just real, you know. And now we've been together for 18 years now, and I can honestly say that the last probably 5 to 8 years have been the most connected, the most honest, the most where I could just be myself no matter what, and without unrealistic expectations, but with real honesty. And so that's been my inner journey to really feel like I can be who I am regardless of where I am, whether it's my sister, my mother, my husband, my child. And that to me feels like a level of freedom that is so insanely amazing. Like, I could just be who I am. I could just do what I want to do and feel like, you know what, if I need to say something in the moment, I'm going to say it. And if I don't say it, that's where I start to, which I see in so many of the women that I work with, it's like this level of quiet desperation, this quiet sense of, I can't really say what I feel. I can't really do what I want. I have to keep it really hidden. Otherwise, something's going to happen. They're not going to like me, or I'm going to lose that relationship, or whatever the result is. So,
you know, Carl Jung talks about integrating your shadow self, and you know, the shadow self is the part of you that says no to people, that rejects other people's ideas for you, that isn't afraid to hit back. And he kind of says the important thing about being human is learning how to integrate that so that you say no at the right times. You don't say no to everything. You don't smack everybody that comes at you, but you learn how to do it in a way that is helpful to you. And I think it seems like that's exactly what you're talking about, is learning how to take care of yourself by you have that sword that says no on it, and you keep it in your sheath until it's really needed. And then when it's needed, you pull it out. And
it's a little bit of that warrior that I heard coming through for you when you were saying, like, I just need something to fight against. You know, I think that's beautiful. I think having that warrior spirit can be really useful, yeah. Especially when
don't encourage me.
Well, I guess because I'm married to a warrior, and my son feels like that too. Like, they're so passionate about what they're passionate about, and yeah. It's great. Like, it can be scary at moments for sure, but I feel like if it's directed and tempered with spirituality, it can be really, really powerful.
I agree totally. So after someone is called to their bliss, a lot of times there's something called the refusal of the call, which is basically you meet these threshold guardians, and they kind of try to scare you off of walking through the door. And in Buddhism, those threshold guardians are represented by fear and attachment. So fear that things are going to change too much, or attachment to your old life, which is another kind of fear. So basically, the thing that tries to keep us from chasing our bliss is fear, fear of change. Did you feel scared going into this? Did you feel like maybe you were doing something that people just didn't do? Did it feel worrisome to you?
Yeah, and I feel like I had a couple of versions of that. And the first version was actually moving to where we live right now, because we left both of our families for this call to more peace in our own lives. And we had to basically face people thinking we were insane for leaving Southern California and moving to a cold place. But for me personally, this really resonates, because I think when someone is called to do something, and I think for us now where we live in this time and place, it's about being visible and sharing yourself and sharing your story as part of your work. That was my call, right? Like, I have something to say. I know it's going to make a difference. And then almost immediately, as soon as you make that decision, it feels like this part of the journey that you're talking about happens. And for me, it was, it doesn't matter. No one's going to listen. And I even actually felt like, what if someone would hurt me? Like, there's this weird sense of, like, if I get up there on stage and tell my story and encourage people to really take care of themselves, someone's going to be upset. Someone's going to, like, want to kill me or something. Like, there was this real sense of danger a little bit, you know, where it was subtle sometimes, and sometimes it was overwhelming, to where I'm like, does this really matter? No one needs this. There's already people doing it. Who cares? You know, like, this is so stupid. You know, like those kind of stories that happen. I call it the gremlin, little gremlin voice that comes out. And it really can feel dangerous, because when you're pressing record, or when you're stepping on stage, or when you're writing that story about your past, that feels like, oh, is someone gonna get upset because you're writing this? Or maybe I'll just, like, share it in my private group where no one can read it. Like, that was something that I did for a while. Like, I just shared this really vulnerable thing, but I only did it in my private group, and I can control who sees it. Whereas what I do now, which is my podcast goes out to I don't know who, and when I speak on stage and it gets recorded, I don't know where that goes. When I'm, you know, being interviewed for a podcast, I don't know who's hearing it. So I have to be at peace now with trusting that I am answering the call. Every time I say yes to share myself and share my story and write a book and do whatever I want to do, like, that's, it's great, it's okay, I'm answering it. Like, I think I've moved beyond that. I've made peace with that, but I definitely spent the first, I don't even know how long, but a good several years, I would say, convincing myself, validating myself, doing the inner work to know that, I don't know if it really matters in the big scheme of things. Maybe I should be out there, like, doing something of service and volunteering my time. I don't know. Does this matter, right? That's the thing. Does it matter? Am I worthy of doing it? And ultimately, I hope I am. I really do. I hope that what I do makes a difference. And I think because of the cycle of how I put out information and people comment, I can see the reflection and feedback now, and I get really great emails. And I know I work with women who are like, thank you so much. This has changed my life. This has changed my work. This has changed my relationship. So I've received enough of that validation to know. But Even someone who receives that validation, who hasn't made that inner peace with themselves, will still have that struggle.
Absolutely.
And so I hope I'm in a place right now. I feel like I am, but I feel like also the more I feel called to do something bigger, right? Like, oh, I want to go and speak in Europe and I want to hold this big event. It happens all over again. It's like, does it matter? What if nobody comes? And the cool thing is, having mentors who are so far ahead of me in some ways and just a few steps ahead in other ways, they feel the same thing. Like, it never goes away. It's part of the process. That's why I have my practice, my daily practice, to keep coming back to what's most important, to make sure that I am aligned and following and trusting. Because I heard this really beautiful idea that, you know, the divine or God or spirit won't show you the whole picture, because you'll almost like psych yourself out of it. They're just going to show you enough to take the very next step. And then the very next step, you can see it for others, but you can't really see it for yourself sometimes as a coach, as someone who helps other people. Like, other people can see it for you, but for yourself, it's almost like you don't need to see the whole thing. Just keep going step by step. And to me, that feels like the best solution to dealing with that voice. It's like, I don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now, but right now this is what I really feel called to do, and I think that's all I can do for myself. I'm not someone who needs a 10-year plan or even a 5-year plan, or quite honestly even a 1-year plan. I'm just like, let me just keep going, this feels really good, let me keep going.
Well, that was beautiful. I couldn't have scripted that better, because the way that in the hero's journey, the way you get past the refusal of the call often is through supernatural aid, which comes in the form of sometimes a mentor, like you talked about, or you know, this picture you mentioned of the divine power just kind of showing you part of the plan. Those are the things that push you forward. Those are the things that hopefully get you past those blocks. And so you have like I said, I couldn't have scripted this better. It's like I laid out the hero's journey and your life just fell into the spots. So let's see if we can keep that going. So the big step in the hero's journey, the kind of fight with the battle, the final boss, as it were, is called the atonement with the Father. And so basically that is you taking authority for your own life. And we've already kind of talked about that a little bit in the very start. We all grow up with parents or ministers or bosses or governments that want to tell us what to do, how to live, what a successful member of society looks like. And so when we atone with the Father, basically we say, nope, I'm going to be in charge. It's my way above all these other ways. That doesn't mean we reject society completely. We still become a part of it. We learn how to function in it, but we function in it with us in control. And it sounds like for you, a lot of that was kind of saying no to corporate bosses and saying no to this expectation that, well, here's what a successful life looks like. You work at this firm and you do this and do this and do this. And you kind of said, no, I don't, that's not me. Is that hitting on something? Does that sound right?
Yeah, you know, for me, absolutely it does. And I think there's two things coming up for me. One is, yes, absolutely. I was always that person. Even in corporate, I was someone who did things my way. Like, okay, great. You want to give me 1 week of vacation? Well, guess what? I already have 3 weeks scheduled, and this is how it is. If you want to hire me, this is how it is. And it always seemed to me like I always took more time off. I always did things my way. Like, it just wasn't. I was blessed with these amazing bosses who were like, oh, okay, sure. Like, I always say, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. And that's just how, that was my philosophy. I'm
Yeah.
like, I have to ask. What's the worst that can happen? They say no, big deal. Like, okay, whatever. I can always find another job. Like, that's just how I felt. It was never this. I guess I am an optimistic person in general. And now there's two things that came up when you said that, like this authority thing. The first was an acceptance, a really, really deep soul level acceptance that my life, my circumstances, the parents I was born into, the country I was born in, my childhood, all of that was part of my story. Like, I accepted it as not anything to cry about, not anything to complain about. Like, this was it. And I was a second child, but my sister was 6 years older, and both my parents worked, so I was like a latchkey kid. And I loved it. I was someone who was like, that made me so independent. I got to decide how to spend my time. I got to, you know, spend whatever. It just, for me, it was a positive story. It was never a negative story. It gave me time to daydream, to write, to put on makeup in my mom's drawers, you know, without her knowing. Like, I loved my freedom. I really loved my freedom. So I never had a negative story about it. And I moved a lot, like every 2 years. And for some people, they'd be like, oh God, I moved a lot. It was so terrible. I had to leave my friends. For me, I was like, oh my gosh, I get to meet a new best friend. I get to redecorate my room again. And I get to, it was always an I get to instead of, oh my gosh, this is happening to me. And I think part of it was in my DNA because you can't really train someone to do that, right? Like, from that early of an age.
Sure.
So that was part of it. And the second thing now, as an adult, looking back and not rewriting that, like, for me, I accept that that was my story. And that's, it serves me in some way now as an adult. Like, that's who, it was to my benefit. And the second thing is now I love, like, one of my biggest things, one of my key messages that I teach is do whatever you want to do. You want to start a business. You want to start a marketing, Facebook ads. You want to speak on stage. You want to write. You want to do this. Great. Do it. Do it your way. There is no template. There is no one right way to do it, or even 3 steps to the right way to do it. Do it your way. And as soon as you can tap into that, that's what people recognize. It's like when we go see a show and we see a dancer in their bliss, we connect with it. It makes us emotional because when we see someone doing something so beautiful and so their way and in their element, we want that, right? So whatever you do, whatever it is that you do, whether it's a podcast or writing or decorating your home or you know, even hosting a dinner, like, do it your way. And so for me, that your way piece does connect to, yes, I kind of feel like I don't want to be told what to do or how to do it. And as soon as I am, I sort of my sword comes out. I guess I have a little bit of a warrior too. I'm like, hell no, don't tell me what to do. You know, although I think I've softened a little bit as I've gotten older, like, okay, I will take your input. That's great. What do you think we should do? And that's become my own personal sort of, you know, growth opportunity to not feel like, because with doing it your way, sometimes can come the little shadow side of feeling like you have to do it all alone.
Sure.
And so that for me does not work anymore. Like, I have enough going on that I love to hire. I don't necessarily want to have a team really ever. It's not my goal at this point, but I want to have people that I can go to for projects or like, here, you do this. You do it really well. You do this. So I've got people I can go to in that way. And that feels so good to know that I don't have to do everything alone, but I can still really, you know, not feel like I have to check with anyone for approval, not feel like I need someone to tell me the right way or the wrong way. I get to decide. And that comes with personal responsibility too. So I don't blame anyone for anything that happens. If I find myself in that loop at all, I step back pretty quickly now and say, okay, hold on. I'm blaming my husband for this, or I'm blaming my partner for this, or whatever. What's my role in this? And so I'm big on personal awareness of personal responsibility in all things. So I tend to not be someone to blame anyone really for, you know, I do call BS when I see it, and I do challenge people to give me reasons why they do things, but ultimately, I'm like, this is my responsibility, and I'm going to work with it, and I'm going to understand why I was motivated or not motivated to do this, and then move through it. So, yeah.
Well, that was awesome, because that, you know, there are voices in the world, and to some degree, the voices specifically in the world I came from that are very much set on the idea that kind of captaining your own ship is ultimately selfish. Mm-hmm. And so I've never felt that way. So it's nice to hear that parroted back to me by somebody with so much enthusiasm and passion. So I could stop the podcast right there. I'm not going to, but I could. So we are rounding the corner though here on the hero's journey, and after you have discovered your bliss, you've taken authority for your life, your responsibility then is kind of to take it to the world. And what they don't tell you in the circle there is that sometimes the world doesn't realize they need what you have, and so their reaction to you is no thanks, I don't really care. And I think you've even touched on this a little bit so far, that sometimes you have this message and you try to get it out there and nobody wants it. And so you have to work that much harder to find, well, who are the people that do want this? Or how can I present it so that it addresses a felt need? Do you feel like you faced that? Was there a time where you were like, I just don't think anybody cares, I think this is just me? Or did you from the beginning kind of see a felt need for this?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a really interesting thing that happens. It can go either way. It could be like either nobody needs this or everybody needs this. I think both are slightly misdirected, because what I have found, and I've been doing this online thing for almost 4.5, 5 years now, but really coaching since I was, you know, in my early 20s, so about 17 years now. And I have found that if you try to over-engineer that part, like, I'm gonna, you know, there's many philosophies in the online marketing world, and one of them is you have to really niche down and really talk to the one person, and then the other part is, like, you know, just kind of spread your message far and wide. And there's somewhere in between that really does feel honest to me. Like, for me, I do work with women, mostly entrepreneurs, mostly moms, but not all. And this is why I really love speaking with you. It's actually so much fun, because it's a very different conversation than I usually have, but we're still talking about the same core things, but uh-huh. Your questions are so different, which is great. So what I have found is it's kind of like an irony, and it's almost like, you know, when you have this real sense of clarity and then it goes away, and yep. Then clarity again and it goes away, that's what I feel is happening with me. And what I see, the people who are really resonating and seem to have figured it out are the ones that are telling their hero's journey, are the ones that are sharing their story as they go. And then you start attracting the people who really need to hear it. And sometimes it might surprise you who those people are. So I think if you try to over-engineer it too much, it might feel like you're you know, preaching to, like, an empty void. There's no one there.
All right.
But also, I feel like there's a little bit of figuring it out as you go, because what I thought my message was at the beginning has gotten more and more clear over the years. Like, this is a long-term game for me, so I trust that. Again, this goes back to that trust thing. I trust that if I do what I love to do in a way that feels really lit up for me, like podcasting and conversations, I could do this all day long. Of course, I would need to take breaks because I need to, like, manage my energy. But, you know, I love this. I could do this all the time. If I keep doing this, but I'm not sure why, like, even when I started my podcast, I didn't even know. I just knew. I knew it was going to be great. I knew I was going to enjoy it. It was going to cost me money to produce it. I didn't care. Like, I just knew I wanted to do it. And that's still how it feels. So I trust that if I'm sharing something that I feel is valuable in the way that I really am enthusiastic about, I trust that the people who need to hear it will hear it. And so, yes, I can spend time over engineering. I think it's also part of my personality. Like you mentioned in the beginning, you took a personality test. So I'm on the Myers-Briggs. I'm an ENFJ. It's very emotion-based. It's very intuitive-based. It's very, like, judgment-based. So for me, I navigate by my inner navigation system versus sure. An outer navigation system, which can feel like I make a lot of pivots, but they make sense to me.
Right.
So I can't say, like, oh, I'm doing it wrong or right based on this model. I get to create my own model And for me, that also means that I have to trust so deeply that those who need to hear it will hear it. And I can't over-engineer it, because I see the people who are trying to over-engineer it are flopping. They're like, why isn't anybody listening? I have this thing to say. And I'm like, okay, let's take a deep breath. What do you love to do? What lights you up? It's like that dancer on stage. They're not dancing to make you happy. They are making you happy as a byproduct, but they're dancing because it's their soul's expression. And so I feel like if you can start tapping into that and doing something that's why I love the name of your podcast, brings you bliss, if you can really spend time, instead of sitting and watching Netflix, take an hour, go into nature, grab a journal, and find out what you really love to do and do that, I think you're never going to go wrong. It might be scary. Like you said, this hero's journey is not for wimps, right? It's like, well, you didn't say that, but that's essentially like, it's not for wimps. Like, you
right.
really need to, you need to.
You need a sword. Yeah. You need it. You, yeah. You've got you to fight to, your way through it.
Yeah, a little bit you do. And I think you can really be battered by it, or you can be bettered by it.
Yeah, right? That's good. So, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That was basically a commercial for what I do. So thank you for that. I hear the same voices you hear that say with your content, you got to niche down, you got to niche down, you got to niche down. And I believe that. I believe that's probably true. But because of the way my personality is, I really get jazzed by hearing somebody say, yeah, but. So thank you for that. Yeah, but. I agree with the people who say you got to niche down. But to some degree, there's some room to massage that, I think. So,
I'll make one differentiation that helped me really understand this. There's two different kind of niches. One is the niche that tells you somebody's gender, their priorities, their work, their age, those kind of niches, right? But then there's another niche, and that niche is that inner niche. Like, what is my mindset? What is my belief system? And if my belief system is that you and I can connect over shared values and a mindset and a way of seeing the world, then I am your niche.
Yeah, right? That's good. Yeah.
I'm not a man. I'm not a father. Like, no, maybe I'm not that person, but I am someone who's super, like, you and I can sit for probably 2 hours and have an amazing conversation about this, you know,
yeah,
because
despite...
we both have similar mindset. So there is that other niche of mindset and seeing the world in the same way that I have women in my group who are in their 20s and in their 50s, even 60s. And we all have this beautiful connection, and it has nothing to do with demographics.
Well, that's very helpful. Thank you very much. I like that. I don't want to have you here and not use you and your expertise. This is probably as close to a Christmas episode as Bliss will have this year. But we're going into the holidays. It's supposed to be the most joyous time of the year, but I think we all know that there's hectic stuff to be done. There's relatives you have to interact with that may not be your favorite. There's a lot of expectation on you just to be happy for the sake of being happy. So for some people, it can be a really rough time of year. So with you and your profession, what do you say to people? How do you take care of yourself November through December?
Yeah, so there's a lot. We can definitely go into a whole other hour about this one thing. But I think if I were to say one thing, is to, some people have these unrealistic expectations about the holidays, both in what they need to do and what they need to buy and how busy that they need to be. And I would say that if that is bringing you stress, which I think that is probably one of the main sources of stress, is like, it has to be this way, it has to be perfect, the presents have to be like this, and the tree has to be like this, and the dinners have to be like this, and oh my gosh, you just like get out of breath thinking about it. So the solution for that is kind of multifold. One is just relax. Like, the holidays are truly, like, what are they about for you? If it's about being with friends, being with family, allowing yourself to be yourself around those people, try to just get some clarity on what the intentionality is behind the holiday. And of course, don't use it as an excuse to give up all your good habits. Still get rest. Eat plenty of, you know, good food. Don't go into like the whole, like, I have to drink every time I go to a dinner thing. Like, really, if you have these core values, stay with them. And then the solution, like, action part of it, a really practical action, is don't overcommit. learn to say no thank you. If you want a peaceful night at home for your New Year's Eve or your, you know, Christmas Eve, do that. Don't do something because you think it's expected of you, because all your kids really want is just to hang out and have fun. And all the people that you love, the ones that you really matter and that you matter to, really just want to sit and like have a warm drink and learn about you and play a game. And like the simple, beautiful luxuries are the things that help you to like detach from those unrealistic social commercialized expectations.
That's good. And that, again, I feel like you're kind of really zeroing in on where I'm at. Sarah and I, my wife, I mentioned I came from a church background. So when you're in the church, like there's no question what Christmas is about. Like they've got it locked down. Like this is everything here is Jesus. And so when we moved away from the church, we kind of had this moment of, oh, well, you know, what does Christmas mean now? And we've got a 5-year-old. So Sarah and I were having this conversation about what do we say to him that Christmas means? And oddly enough, we were watching the TV show Community, and it was their Christmas episode. We were watching on Hulu it's from years ago. And one of the characters said, Christmas, the meaning of Christmas is that it means something to everybody, and you get to decide what it means to you, and from there it's your responsibility to make Christmas about that. And so that was a really gratifying, that meant a lot to me. Sarah is still, she wants a little bit more to put in, like she kind of wants to know, okay, well here's what it should mean for you, Jack Henry, and give it to our kid. but for me that was really a comfortable answer. I really liked that, and that seems to be kind of what you're saying, is like find the meaning there and make it about that. Don't make it about the commercialism or this nostalgic idyllic picture in your head that you think you have to hit. Just figure out what's important to you, and that's what Christmas is about. Have I completely put words in your mouth? Am I
Oh, that's great. Absolutely. And I think, you know, one final thing, and this is a tip that I heard from the Oprah very recently, which I absolutely love, and I've been talking about in my membership circle and with the women that I adore, which is like, what if instead of giving that person a thing, right, unless there is that thing that you really want to give someone, which is great because I love gifts, I love beautiful things, sure. I love gifting beautiful things with meaning. But she said, what if we gave people gifts of appreciation? Like, what if you pulled out a card and sat down and wrote, Sarah, the 10 things I appreciate about you? I mean, could you just feel how amazing that would feel for her to receive that? And for you to receive that from her. So imagine those people in your life that maybe you don't connect with as often, or maybe you do connect with, but instead of giving them another thing, like you just wrote a card, maybe you do give them like a beautiful chocolate and a card with the list. I mean, you don't have to wait for the holidays to do this, but I think it's a beautiful reframe on what we're really giving each other. And so if you can appreciate, this isn't a gratitude list, it's appreciation, which focuses on a very different perspective, which is like, wow, I really appreciate how you have taken the time to, you know, really get to know me and ask me thoughtful questions. That is very meaningful for me. And if you can do that on a regular basis, but really give it as a gift, to me, it feels like it would connect people on a very deep level. So that's something that someone can do to feel like they don't have to go to some store and go in. Like, no one wants you to go into debt for their gift. You know, nobody does. They just want to connect with you. That's what we all want. We want to feel like we're connected to someone. And so I know if someone gave me that gift, I would just be a ball of tears. I would feel so seen, so loved. And that's, I guess, one of my love languages is, you know, appreciation. Like someone who really feels like, wow, thank you so much for what you do. Not that I need it to be friends, but wouldn't that be amazing to have someone appreciate you in that way?
Well, that's awesome. So if you're listening to that and you take that advice, your shopping could be done today. Like you could have no more preparation to do except writing some notes about people you love. So that's awesome. Elena, this was incredible. I'm going to be honest. There was a moment while we were having this conversation that I had a vision of my future, where if talking to people like you about their bliss and about what they love is what I get to do with the rest of my life, then I couldn't be any happier. So thank you for this conversation, because it made for a good podcast, but also because it kind of cast a little vision before me. So thank you for that.
I got chills when you said that. That little intuitive nudge going, yep, he's got it. It's like watching a dancer see their own vision. Like, yep, you've got it. That's so awesome. So glad I could be part of that with you.
Well, that's very meaningful. So if people want to connect with you and pick up what you're putting down, where are the best places to do that?
ElenaLipson.com is the best place to find all things Elena. You've got my, I do teach my basic magic morning practice, which is one of the first sort of spiritual daily practices that I teach. It's free. It's a completely free video. So if you go to my site and just put in your name and email, you'll get instantly a response with a video link that walks you through creating a daily practice. And if you're listening to this during the holiday season, it might be the perfect time to start like a 5-minute, a 10-minute daily practice that really helps you to align your mind, your body, and your spirit every day so that you can show up in the holidays in a way that feels really good. So that would be the best place to start.
Awesome. Great. Did you get to say everything you wanted to say? Is there anything else on your mind that you'd like to get out there?
Let's see. I would just say, I love that. Follow your bliss. You know, like, what does that mean to you? I always say, anything we talk about, like, what does it mean to you? Don't take our word for it, right? I mean, I don't know if you're back from like a Reading Rainbow days, but you always said at the end, don't take my word for it. Uh-huh. You know, find out for yourself. So yeah, find out for yourself. I'd love to know. I would love to know what people thought of the conversation, to be quite honest. If they leave you a comment in a review on your podcast, I'd love to know what people thought.
We will encourage that. Everybody, if you listen to this and it meant something to you, please take time to comment and share what it meant to you. Elena, thank you so much. The conversation has been great. I think I finally got a handle on time zones, so this has been a big day for me. So I really appreciate your time.
I do as well. It was really fun. I'm totally lit up, and I'm good for the rest of the day. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Awesome.
And I can't wait to share this episode with my listeners as well.
Thank you.
There you go. Wasn't that incredible? Wasn't that an awesome conversation? I hope it was for you. You do these things and it means something to you, and you just hope that comes through to the listener. So hopefully you got some inspiration to, if you haven't already, to find your bliss, to start looking for it. Also, hopefully you have some inspiration to reach out to Elena and maybe avail yourself of her services. She exists in very rarefied air. There aren't a lot of people who have prioritized making women feel like the best version of themselves and just showing up in their lives as strong, powerful women who have taken care of themselves. So I would encourage you, if you are a woman, to reach out to her. If you are a man who has a woman in your life who have been from speaking with her, then reach out to her also for the women in your life. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. New episodes every week. Go out there and follow your bliss, guys.